Hello and welcome to the Personnel Today Friday podcast. I'm Tara Craig and I'm joined by Noel O'Reilly and John Charlton. Coming up, we hear how the CIPD has called for employers to be more proactive in dealing with staff with mental health issues. We discuss a new EAT ruling that says that volunteers are not covered by the Discrimination and Disability Act. But first, the news. The latest round of postal strikes has been postponed until the new year. An interim peace deal has been reached with the Communication Workers Union, allowing further talks to take place, overseen by ACAS and the Trades Union Congress. City headhunters have been inundated with applications from Royal Bank of Scotland bankers after the company announced that it would not pay cash bonuses this year. And the Conservatives have announced plans to negotiate the return of powers over employment legislation to the UK should they win the general election. You can read about these and other news stories in full on personneltoday.com. Noel, a CIPD survey found that more than a quarter of UK workers see their mental health as moderate or poor, yet 98% of them are still working. Can you tell us a bit more?
Well, that's right, Tara, and only a third of those surveys say their employer is supporting staff with mental health problems. And what the CIPD are saying is that basically HR and employers need to be more proactive about managing people with mental health problems. That means better communication, coaching, supporting of staff, and more awareness among managers of mental health issues and referring to occupational health departments.
But I mean, a lot of these problems aren't actually work related, so how much responsibility should employers be taking for them?
Well, yes, I mean, some of the response on personaltoday.com has been querying this. I mean, one respondent said that actually, if you break it down, only 15 of the 2,000 people had severe mental health issues or serious mental health issues. So, you know, what is really the impact of it anyway? But in terms of responsibility, he also queried whether employers should take responsibility for domestic problems, etc. Well, I would say that actually they should, because for a start, good line management actually helps performance across the board in any case. You've got a synergy there with things like employee engagement. Then, of course, there's the sort of worry about stress claims and your responsibilities under Health and Safety at Work Act, Disability Discrimination Act, and so on. Then there's the cost argument. There were other guidelines recently produced by the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, which said that it costs an average company £250,000 a year. That's a company with about 1,000 employees. Mental health problems at work, that is. So really there's that, and there's growing evidence that awareness and early intervention actually will reduce absence levels in the long run.
Noel, what should HR be doing to address these mental health issues in the workplace?
Well, the answer is in a lot of companies a lot more. The NICE report that I refer to actually said that most firms aren't using the kind of measures like annual audits of wellbeing and so on, or the health and safety executive standards. The sorts of things that they should be doing is really treating people fairly, better communication, better awareness and trying to reduce the stigma of mental health issues, and systems in place to assess and monitor the mental well-being of employees. That could be attitude surveys or absence information, staff turnover information, etc. Flexible working is another thing, and also trying to strengthen critically the role of line managers, making their leadership style more supportive.
Surely the CIPD report is just reflecting what we already knew, Noel.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Tara. You have to ask, do we really need another report? We already have the HSE management standards, the NICE guidelines, the Foresight report that came out last year, the Work Foundation's research and good work, and there's a hell of a lot of other stuff out there. So why the CIPD has felt the need to invest in another bit of research of this sort, begs a few questions.
Thank you, Noel. Okay, John, can you give us a little bit of background on this new ruling, please?
Yeah, of course, Tara. This is a decision made by the Employment Appeal Tribunal last week, and it was a ruling in the case of X v Mid Sussex. Now, this had wound a tortuous path, to say the least, through the legal system. A bit of background on this: X was an HIV-infected volunteer who did volunteering work with the Mid Sussex Citizens Advice Bureau, and she brought a claim for discrimination against Mid Sussex CAB, alleging that she was discriminated against because of her HIV status. Unfortunately, I've been unable to get hold of either party this morning to find out what in particular prompted her to take this action. Anyway, she was a specialist advisor for welfare rights and worked under a volunteer agreement. And she first took this case up in 2007. It went to a pre-hearing review where the judge found she had not had a contract with the Citizens Advice Bureau and therefore was unable to bring a claim. So X then went to the EAT, which refused permission to appeal the pre-hearing review ruling, but she got permission to go to the Court of Appeal. The Court of Appeal heard the case earlier this year and referred it back to the EAT. His decision was released last week. This resulted in a ruling that her claim was rejected in the first instance because volunteers are not protected by disability discrimination legislation, principally the DDA. Well, the ruling said that she could not be protected under disability discrimination legislation because her volunteering did not fall within the definition of occupation.
So yeah, she didn't have an occupation under the
EU equal treatment legislation.
So no volunteers are protected by employment law at all, is there?
No, just this particular act.
This particular
one. Yeah, it's only refers to this act.
Has there been any legal comment about this, John?
Well, Victoria Cook, solicitor at Bates, Wells, Braithwaite, represented the CAB, and she said that the judgment was in line with previous decisions. This isn't the first such case, but maintained that laws designed to protect employees did not apply equally to volunteers. She said the decision recognises the unique relationship between charities and volunteers, whereby volunteers give their often considerable time and effort to charitable organisations for free. Obviously, this is not the first case. This is a bit of an issue. And I contacted Volunteering England on this, and they said that they are launching an inquiry on November the 18th which will look into rights and responsibilities of volunteers. And once the inquiry is over, this is going to run into next year, Volunteering England will set out in detail the legal rights, such as they are, of volunteers. So we look forward to seeing that. Interestingly, they told me that there are more than 20 million volunteers, and this is in England, let alone the rest of the UK. But a lot of those are what they call informal volunteers. But there are a considerable number of formal volunteers. So maybe we can expect to see more legal developments on this front.
John, how do you think an HR director in an organisation that uses a lot of volunteers should respond to this ruling?
Well, I guess it's brought some clarity to a particular issue, has it not? So in a way, it's helped them if they have to face these cases. Because when an individual brings a case, brings a grievance like this, they also have the right to go to the courts, the tribunals and so on, to see how that goes. Because one of the issues that strikes me is that a lot of the volunteers will turn up pretty much like employees. There'll be an unwritten agreement, I would imagine, that they're going to turn out on particular times, on particular days, and do particular work for free. So you can see that it's nudging in custom and practice terms into what we would understand to be regular employment and relationships between employees and employer.
And also these employers are dependent on volunteers, so they will want to treat them in a way where their recruitment and retention and their contribution is going to continue.
Yeah, and of course, the role of volunteers, I think, is becoming ever more important. Has always been important to charities, but charities are trying to do so much more, becoming much bigger, much more professionally run organisations, relying on often very, very well-educated, intelligent, driven, responsible people. So they're going to have to look at how they treat these people, I think.
Thank you, John. Well, that's it from this week's podcast. Thank you for listening. Remember to go online to check the latest news and views from the HR community at hrspace.co.uk. That's hrspace.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.